Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson. At the beginning of the 1960s, jazz musician Yusuf Lateef moved from his hometown of Detroit to New York City and continued a musical evolution that would eventually earn him one of jazz's most musically expansive legacies. In the next hour, we'll hear some notable Lateef recordings from that era and talk with writer and Detroit jazz historian Mark Stryker about Lateef's journey through these years. It's the jazz message of Yusuf Lateef, the 1960s, coming up on this edition of Nightlights.
Thank you.
Yusuf Lateef and the Plum Blossom from his 1961 album Eastern Sounds. In 1960, Yusuf Lateef turned 40 and made a big change in his life. The veteran multi-instrumentalist who'd spent time with Dizzy Gillespie's big band in the late 1940s and made a string of highly regarded albums in the late 1950s while living in his hometown of Detroit, headed off to New York City, joining a migration of other talented Motor City predecessors such as trumpeter Thad Jones and trombonist Curtis Fuller. Mark Stryker, author of Jazz from Detroit, explains why Lateef undertook this transition.
He leaves Detroit at the beginning of 1960 because he really feels like he's basically done everything that he can do in the city. He'd had a long-standing gig at Klein's Show Bar, which ran from 1956 to 59, playing every night of the week, and the kind of security that one has like that is, it's unusual, and that's one of the things that kept him in Detroit through the late 50s was that particular gig. And all during that time, in those later years of the 50s, he was, coming out to New York to record for Savoy and for Prestige. Verve, there's a record on that label too. So, he was going back and forth, but he was still based in Detroit. And when the gig at Klein's ends, he begins to think about coming to New York, and he does in 1960. And because he had been making records for several years at that point, he was a pretty well-known quantity. And so when he gets here, he doesn't have trouble finding work. He almost immediately gets hooked up with Charles Mingus, which is a very fruitful relationship. It doesn't last very long. More or less a year and a half, sort of off and on, he's playing with Mingus. And it's a good fit. Yusuf is such a great blues player, and Mingus's music is streaked with the blues. And Yusuf is such an imposing personality and a little bit quirky, too, as a musician in some ways. And so that fits well within Mingus's aesthetic.
Lateef was busy as both a sideman and as a leader in these early New York City years. Mark Stryker singles out the album The Centaur and the Phoenix as a favorite from this period of Lateef's career.
What's fascinating to me about this record is that it's a large ensemble record. So a lot of the record has more or less a nine-piece group. And there are two compositions on here by a fairly obscure contemporary classical American composer named Charles Mills, who wrote in all kinds of idioms, a very eclectic composer, and had a very close relationship with jazz. He wrote jazz pieces. He wrote third stream works that sort of blend classical music and jazz ideas. And there are two really fascinating pieces on this record. One is the title track, which is more or less a through composed 5 to 6 minute work that just goes through a myriad of different ideas. It's very meticulously composed. Yusuf solos on it, basically over a blues, but everything is very well integrated, and it's a unique piece. And then the other piece on here, Summer Song is what it's called, is more like a kind of a pastoral, almost, it's not quite a ballad, but it's really kind of a pastoral piece. And again, Yusuf here is heard on flute, and the scoring is very interesting. Lots of woodwinds, muted brass. There's a passage at the end where Mills, the composer, quotes very directly the Rite of Spring. It's a fascinating piece. Thank you.
Yusuf Lateef heard on flute performing Summer Song from his album The Centaur and the Phoenix, recorded in October 1960. Jazz from Detroit author Mark Stryker cites an album Lateef recorded the following year, Into Something, as a sign of the growth Lateef would experience throughout the 1960s.
That's the record where you can really hear Yusuf gaining maturity, and in his sound, there's more weight to his sound even than there had been previous, and everything about it has a strong confidence. There's a track called Water Pistol, which is like an I Got Rhythm bass tune. And Yusuf is playing overtones and he's playing all the registers of the horn. And there's no piano. And they just, with Elvin playing drums behind him, it sounds like a stampede of buffalo or something. It's a really powerful track and a great record. And I think what you see happening over the whole course of the decade of the 60s with Yusuf is this kind of maturation. You know, let's remember that Yusuf was born in 1920. So he's 40 years old, basically, when he moves to New York in 1960. And so that decade takes him from the 40s to the 50s. That's sort of, you know, prime maturity. Now, Yusuf, of course, lives into his 90s. So it's barely middle age. For him, but as a musician, he really, for me, the 60s is when Yusuf really comes into his own, both as a composer, as an improviser, as an instrumentalist. He finds ways of better integrating the world music influences. He really matures as a band leader in the 1960s. It's really the decade for me when it kind of all comes together for him.
Yusuf Lateef on tenor sax performing Water Pistol from his 1961 album Into Something. In addition to his leader dates and his time with Charles Mingus, Lateef also did what proved to be a significant stint with saxophonist Cannonball Adderley's group in the early 1960s.
I think what Cannonball does for Yusuf is just is really widens his visibility. And, you know, he gets featured billing with the band. Cannonball plays his compositions. Yusuf plays not just tenor, but he plays flute, and he plays oboe features with the band, usually a slow blues or Trouble in Mind. He plays on oboe with the band, and generally he would get a feature, at least one feature every set. That gig really elevated him because Cannonball had one of the most popular bands in jazz at that period and was playing all the major festivals, was going to Europe, playing all the major clubs. And when you come through as a sideman, a featured sideman, with a band like that, then when you go out on your own just a couple of years later, everybody knows you. And that certainly is what happened with Yusuf.
Yusuf Lateef with Cannonball Adderley's group soloing on Dizzy's Business, recorded live at the Village Vanguard for the album Cannonball in New York. By 1964, Lateef was working as a leader again, and two live albums that he recorded document what Mark Stryker thinks was his best band to date.
For me, that's a real watershed because it's Yusuf's best band up until that point. Richard Williams is a trumpet player, Mike Nock, the pianist, Ernie Farrow from Detroit on bass, and James Black on drums. And a lot of interesting compositions. This is a good place to hear the way in which Yusuf was finding a sort of a deeper way of bringing in his Middle Eastern instruments and certain kinds of, let's say, Middle Eastern tonalities, modalities in the music. You know, jazz is changing at this time. It's the avant-garde is going, the music is getting freer. John Coltrane's quartet is really exploring modal music. And you can hear some of those influences filtering into the Live at Pep's material. And it's all still very much Yusuf, and he's still playing the blues. And so, you know, all these things that we think about when we think about Yusuf's playing, the way he reconciles the roots of the music with the world music ideas and his own, you know, personality, all that stuff is beginning to really solidify here. And you can hear it all coming together on the Live at Pep's, particularly the first side, Sister Mamie, that track. And then there's a piece called Number 7, which goes through several different sections. You know, it's one of those live records that I hear and I always think, man, I wish I would have been in the club that week. That would have been a really fun week to be there to heard that music live.
Thank you. amazing.
Yusuf Lateef heard on Sheyei, an oboe-like instrument from India, performing Sister Mamie from the Impulse album Live at Pep's. I'll have more of the 1960s music of Yusuf Lateef and jazz writer Mark Stryker's commentary in just a few moments. You can listen to many previous Nightlights programs, including a show about Yusuf Lateef in the 1950s, on our website at wfiu.org/nightlights. Production support for Nightlights comes from Columbus Visitors Center, celebrating everywhere art and unexpected architecture in Columbus, Indiana. Modern architecture and design to explore 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. More at columbus.in.us. I'm David Brent Johnson, and you're listening to The Jazz Message of Yusuf Lateef, the 1960s, on Nightlights. Featuring the 1960s music of Yusuf Lateef on this edition of Nightlights with commentary from jazz writer Mark Stryker, author of Jazz from Detroit. The 1960s proved to be a wide-ranging period of evolution for Lateef. In 1964, he began recording for Impulse Records, the home label for John Coltrane and other 60s modernists.
The records on Impulse are really good. There's six of them, and I find them very satisfying listens. Yusuf feels very comfortable with himself, comfortable with its repertoire. The tunes on most of the records, excluding Live at Pep's, which is live, the others are studio dates, and they tend to be feature shorter performances. And so they're very concentrated. And I, in particular, I like the record called The Golden Flute, which features obviously his flute from the title, but also there's some great tenor on there. He plays a swinging version of Straighten Up and Fly Right, that reminds you that he came up in the 40s, you know, and loved Lester Young. There's a beautiful ballad version of on tenor where he plays Ghost of a Chance, I Don't Stand a Ghost of a Chance with You. Very rewarding performances there. Thank you.
Yusuf Lateef performing Straighten Up and Fly Right from his album The Golden Flute, released in 1966 when the avant-garde new jazz movement was at its zenith, with Impulse label mates like John Coltrane, Archie Shepp, and Albert Eiler leading the way. Mark Stryker on how Lateef was not just a fellow traveler of sorts with this movement, but also in some ways one of its pioneers.
He's certainly very sympathetic to the musicians that are exploring new forms, new ideas, the free jazz of the day. I mean, Yusuf was an experimenter, you know, from day one. And so you go back a decade in the 1950s, and he's already exploring Middle Eastern ideas. I mean, in fact, John Coltrane is very clear that he took ideas from Yusuf in pieces like India, for instance. And Yusuf is experimenting with sort of some collective improvisation. There are these pieces that he recorded in 1957 that almost sound like the Art Ensemble of Chicago in some ways 10 years earlier. So he was very open to experimentation and those ideas. And I think when he heard people like John Coltrane and Ornette Coleman, he recognized a kindred spirit in them, in the way that they were pushing the music. He and John Coltrane were very, very close friends. So Yusuf was always in favor of moving ahead, trying new things, expanding yourself as a person, expanding your mind, educating yourself. He was open to anything.
Yusuf Lateef performing One Little Indian from his 1965 Impulse album, 1984. The mid-1960s found Lateef resuming his education, changing record labels, and broadening his already expansive musical approach.
In 1967, he signs with Atlantic Records, and on record, he begins to explore a variety of African-American vernacular idioms. I mean, there are certainly some straight-ahead jazz records to start with, but then he begins exploring soul, and R&B, and a little bit of gospel. He basically spends a decade with Atlantic from 66 to 67, rather, to 76, roughly a dozen records or so. He sort of covers the waterfront through all of those records, from jazz, gospel, fusion, funk, R&B, soul. It's sort of all in there in that period. And he's working with the producer at Atlantic, Joel Dorn. They're clearly, you know, searching for wider airplay, but I wouldn't chalk it all up to the sense of going for a commercial sound. Certainly the music he's making is a little more quote-unquote commercial, but it's Yusef. He's always experimenting. He wants to try different things. And I think in some ways it goes with his educational outlook. It's sort of this idea of a encyclopedic sweep through Black vernacular music. And that's what you see through the Atlantic records.
Yusef Lateef heard on flute performing Stay With Me from his 1967 Atlantic album, The Complete Yusef Lateef. Mark Stryker singles out another album from Lateef's late 1960s Atlantic period for special notice.
the record from the late 60s that I really like the best, and which is sort of revered here in Detroit, is the one that's called Yusef Lateef's Detroit. And every piece on that record is named for a historic neighborhood or some important aspect of Detroit. And even the cover of the record shows Yusef's profile of his face superimposed over a map of the city of Detroit. So it's very much an homage to its roots. And musically, there's a larger ensemble. There's some funk and boogaloo tunes on the record. It's got a great feel, good players, a good spirit about it.
Yusef Lateef on tenor sax performing Russell and Elliot from his 1969 album, Yusef Lateef's Detroit. Mark Stryker says Lateef's Detroit roots and connections remain significant throughout the 1960s.
through the 1960s, he retains very close ties with Detroit musicians. There are some records like Into Something or The Golden Flute, which have literally all Detroit ensembles. And in the later 60s, Hugh Lawson comes back into the band. Hugh Lawson had played piano in USAF's first band that he led back in Detroit at Klein's in 1957. And a decade later, he's sort of back in the band, is on a number of those Atlantic records. Roy Brooks, the drummer, is on some of those Atlantic records. Ernie Farrow, the bass player, plays with USAF during the 1960s. Herman Wright, Barry Harris. You know, again, he keeps those ties. And the record USAF Lateef's Detroit, obviously, you know, is a very clear indication of his affection for the city. But those personal relationships that were forged in the 1950s continued to play a role through the 1960s as well. Like many Detroiters, he remained intensely proud of his city and his roots, and the relationships that he built in the city were long-lasting and basically carried him certainly through the 1970s into the 1980s, when his music begins to change in other directions and he gets away from straight quote-unquote jazz. Then you don't see him, say, performing with Detroiters quite as much. But even then, he does play with the band Eternal Wind, and there are Detroit musicians in that multi-ethnic ensemble. So, you know, once a Detroiter, always a Detroiter.
For USAF Lateef, the end of the 1960s would ultimately prove to be a passing of the midpoint in a long and never stagnant career in music. He died in 2013 at the age of 93. Mark Stryker on his legacy and influence.
USAF was always about addition, adding stuff to the pile, and instead of weeding stuff out. And certainly, you know, I say in my book, you know, you can draw a line from USAF through things like John Coltrane's India and Don Cherry's experiments, and all the way up through Vijay Iyer and Rudresh, and all of that, it seems to me, is connected. But also just the idea of you can experiment. You should experiment. It's a big legacy. Sometimes I think it's so big and so diverse that he gets short shrift because it's hard to kind of put your arms around it because it's so sprawling.
Stryker points to Lateef's 1970 album Sweet 16 as a sign of the musical directions Lateef would take in the later decades of his life.
What's interesting on that record is that you get a full side is devoted to an extended composition called the Blues Suite. It's four movements. It's written for his quartet with a classical chamber ensemble, so they're strings. It's his first real example of extended composition and using classical forces, and that will foreshadow a great deal of his work from the 1980s and 90s and on. Thank you.
I closed with music from Yusuf Lateef's Symphonic Blues Suite from the 1970 album Sweet 16. Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. Special thanks to Mark Stryker. You can listen to many previous Nightlights programs on our website at wfiu.org/nightlights. Production support for Nightlights comes from Columbus Visitor Center, celebrating everywhere art and unexpected architecture in Columbus, Indiana. Modern architecture and design to explore 45 minutes south of Indianapolis. More at columbus.in.us. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.